Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, everybody? It's the Locked On NHL Podcast, your Friday edition. Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola, as always. Tom, how are things going out in Edmonton?
Lovely, Joe. It's been a mild winter, although not a lot of people are really enjoying it because of COVID. We've been under restrictions, and I was just telling you before we hopped on that we had wind squalls here this week. And as I say that, I'm staring at my balcony where all my patio furniture, which is like metal and generally kind of heavy, is all like crumpled together and toppled over. And then I have an owl to keep pigeons away because I live downtown in Edmonton, and even he's toppled over. So I don't really want to go out there and rearrange everything. So I'm just going to leave it as is, which is a mess.
Oh, this is absolutely the time of year where if there's a bad weather day and stuff's thrown around or it's buried, like, you're just like, I'll deal with it in March.
Exactly. I'm watching a light dusting of snow accumulate on this stuff. It's almost like artistic, really. Yeah. I should take a picture and post it to social media. But again, a little too lazy to even do that.
That's kind of like what it's been here. I've been finding that, like you said, COVID, of course, affects everything where nobody is out. Like, you even, like, when you talk about like sledding or tubing or skiing, like, there is some of that going on, but most people I know that do that regularly, and those are all things that I do sparingly, it's like even activities like that aren't happening all that much. And maybe part of that is it's kind of the same thing here, like you just said, like, it's like dusting here. There hasn't been any crazy snow yet. But it's Buffalo and it's Edmonton. So next week we could be talking buried inside our homes, and I would not be surprised.
It's so true. Knock on wood, Joe. Knock on wood.
Lot to get to on today's episode. Columbus, there is, I mean, tons to talk about with this Pierre-Luc Dubois situation going on there, which we actually touched on last week, and it's actually gotten a lot worse since we talked about it last. The Washington Capitals are in some trouble with the league for their handling of their COVID protocols. And then our biggest surprises so far through the 2021 season, as we cover all four divisions here on Friday. Let's start in CBJ, though. Let's start with the Blue Jackets, because last night that situation got as bad, I think, as you could really imagine it, where you've got a coach who is definitely known in John Tortorella as being a hard nose. And if a guy goes out there and does not put in 100% effort, that is the first coach in the league that is going to bench him for the rest of the game. And that is exactly what happened to the Blue Jackets last night. Dubois played 3:55 in the first period. His final shift, I mean, there was like a close-up just watching him the whole time. I think he was pretty much gliding the most of the way, but you're like, okay, maybe he's just not around the puck. And I think that's the way I was thinking at the beginning is, well, he hasn't really had an opportunity to be near the puck and put in 100% effort yet. And then the puck goes into the corner, and there's Dubois, there's two defenders, and he is just standing there, and he lets the puck go. You could just tell, not a guy that is interested at all in putting it all on the line for the jersey that he is currently wearing. And as a result, Tortorella benches him. Dubois doesn't see the ice for the rest of the game. And I think that might be, I've seen guys benched, you know, where they play like a shift or two the rest of the way, but I'm sure it's happened. I'm not sure I can remember, though, the last time a guy just got benched for that amount of time in a game.
It has definitely happened. I'm trying to remember when was the last time that it just off the top of my head, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a John Tortorella benching that was the most recent like that. But Joe, you summed up that shift, floating, as we like to say, kind of half-assed moving the feet, half-assed forecheck, and I think all indicators point to this starting to boil over. And I saw a tweet earlier in the day that sounds like John Tortorella has full backing from the executive team and the management from the Blue Jackets. And if you hear that and that's being made public, it's probably coming from the team directly, then that's not a good sign for Pierre-Luc Dubois. And you know, some people suggested maybe they turn this into a Jonathan Drouin, Steve Yzerman situation where Drouin was sent down and didn't want to play in the AHL. And it came to a head when he was finally traded to the Montreal Canadiens. Maybe it's getting to that point, but yeah, Pierre-Luc Dubois, it just looks like he's given up on the Jackets, which is unfortunate. He should be their top player. And all of a sudden we're watching him coast through almost 4 minutes of, I can't even say action, but just participating in NHL hockey. And the coach benches him, staples him to the bench to keep the seat warm right in the middle. And I don't know where this, it's not going to end well, obviously. I shouldn't say I don't know where this is going to go. I do know where this is going to go. It's not going to end well between Pierre-Luc Dubois and the Columbus Blue Jackets. And he's not doing himself any favors or his stock around the league. You want to see a guy playing well, performing well. And when other teams know that the Jackets are at a disadvantage, especially in a time where budgets are so tight around the league, he's not doing anything good for himself. I mean, I look at Winnipeg and the Patrick Laine situation, and I know we talked about Dubois maybe being a target for the Winnipeg Jets. Laine wants out. We know about that, but you know, it sounds like he's going to have to stay put for the season. He's been injured the last little bit, but if he's going out there and playing carefree and just scoring and giving at least an honest effort every night, and he knows the situation and he has that conversation with management, and there's that mutual agreement, like, hey, give us this last season. We're going to try to make something work out, but we need you playing and contributing. That's a far better scenario than what we're watching play out in Columbus, where both sides are just digging in their heels, being angry at one another, and the end result is a star player giving a piss poor performance, and then the coach benching him the rest of the night, just burning a hole in the lineup for that night. So it's going to be – they lose to Tampa to boot. So that just adds more salt to the wound.
Yeah.
Not good. And it might be coming to a head sooner than we anticipated.
Yeah, it's such a bad look for Dubois. I mean, I even could understand, I guess, where he was coming from before the season, where he wanted a bigger market, and maybe there is something there with him not wanting to play for John Tortorella. You know, players have in the past gotten sick of playing for him. And Columbus, by the way, has had issues keeping their star players, even most recently with Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky. So, like, I was kind of with him. Like, it wasn't the best look that you're demanding a trade out of somewhere as a 22-year-old 4 years into your career when they're also trying to make you, like, their marquee player. Your number one center, like even your franchise player to some extent. But when you do that on the ice, to me, you lose all benefit of the doubt. And what the sad part is, it might actually work for him. You know, if he wants a trade, I mean, that might fast forward the process of getting that done. But at the same time, like if you wanted to play in Montreal or you like one of these big market teams that might be looking at you, and they look at that and think, oh, I don't want that now, because if I know that that's in that guy, where if I have the wrong coach in place and he's going to do that, I don't want that situation. And I think really he could have hurt his own market for himself. Well, the Blue Jackets too, of course, because if they're going to trade him, I mean, they're not gaining any leverage in this situation, to say the least.
No, and this is interesting because there are a few little differences between the Drouin and Pierre-Luc Dubois situations. Is, like you mentioned, John Tortorella is a polarizing coach, and teams and other management around the league might be looking at that and saying he's just fed up with Tortorella's games that he plays or whatever. He's just fed up. And that's the other thing too, is at the other end of the rink, you've got John Cooper, probably one of the most likable coaches in the National Hockey League. The players all seem to like him. So that's where it's a little bit different. And on top of that, the Jackets aren't the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Lightning have been a really strong team, obviously defending Stanley Cup champions this year, but they were a strong team with depth, even during the Drouin situation. The Jackets are not that. And they, I don't think they have the capacity to really let a young rising star sit on the sidelines and stew in anger and frustration the same way Tampa was able to with Drouin. So a couple of different wrinkles, and it shows you the situation the Jackets are in. And it sucks for Blue Jackets fans, too, because they're looking at themselves thinking, what's wrong with Columbus? Why don't guys want to stay here?
Yeah.
And they have a nice arena. They have a nice facility. It's a smaller city. It's a college town. You can have fun there. They love their hockey. I know they love their football. There's no denying that. But maybe Pierre-Luc Dubois has just said, you know what, I'm fed up with John Tortorella. Jarmo Kekalainen's not on my side. He's on Tortorella's side. Time to go somewhere else. And if he wants a bigger market or more attention, Canada, one of these Canadian teams, I'm pretty sure every Canadian team would welcome him with open arms.
Yeah. Last thing on this, I think you're like bringing up the perspective of a Blue Jackets fan. I think if I were a Blue Jackets fan, I could absolutely see myself sitting in a chair reading this stuff today and thinking, all right, I need a new coach. Because if I need to be able to keep these guys, I've done a decent job acquiring talent in the last 5 years. And I've already let two guys walk out the door. And I nailed this draft pick when a lot of people thought that that was a bad pick over Jesse Puljujärvi, at least at the time. I remember that draft in Buffalo where most people were stunned that Dubois went third over him. And that actually turned out a pretty good pick. And you nailed the pick. But now you're not able to get to see the fruits of your labor just because of who you are as a team. And I don't know, I might see why Blue Jacket fans would look at this and think, yeah, not a good look by the guy, but maybe it's a sign that I need to turn into a more player friendly team. Something like that. But again, all that stuff is behind the scenes with Tortorella. So it's so hard to know. You're basically playing a guessing game as to if that's the reason or if it is just the city or if it's the market, you know. And you're basically just speculating at that point. So
a lot
that goes into it. And we'll see where what it becomes. If there's a trade, I think we could see it in the next few days, but of course, trade deadline a few months off. So this could be the long game as well. Are we ready for some football, and are we ready for some hockey? There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Bills and Chiefs in the AFC Championship game on Sunday. We don't yet know the status of Patrick Mahomes, so you're taking a big risk by trying to decide on that game right now. Chiefs favored by 2.5. It actually opened with the Bills as a favorite, but as it became a little more clear that there's a better chance than not that Mahomes will play on Sunday. Again, that's a guess, but it seems it's trending that way. The line goes back to 2.5 to Kansas City. So if you're one to take the risk and want to see, maybe if it's Chad Henne, if you get the Bills plus 2.5, that's a pretty good job. Whereas if Mahomes plays and you want to go on the Kansas City side, the line could get even stretched by a little bit more. So that's a game to decide on. You've got hockey going on right now. Lines on that. Futures. I'm looking at MVP futures. Jack Eichel plus 3,000 for the Hart. Pretty good. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On NHL podcast. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts. Let's now go to DC. The Washington Capitals in some trouble with the league this week. The organization fined $100,000 for players placed on the COVID list who will miss 4 games minimum. That is because the 4 players, Alex Ovechkin, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Ilya Samsonov, and Dmitry Orlov, were all hanging out in a hotel room with masks off. And that is a violation of NHL COVID protocol. By the way, I don't think I knew that was a violation of NHL COVID protocol, because I of course have not read the whole thing in the CBA, but I thought I would have assumed that, like, Ovechkin's wife actually made this point on Instagram, and I don't want to take too much out of that, but she actually made a point where the rules are the rules and you got to follow them. But I could understand the frustration where hey, these guys are sitting next to each other on the bench. They're hugging each other after they score goals, but they can't be in close vicinity once they get to the hotel. That was strange to me that that is a part of this, but it is. And I think the player's got to be smarter than that.
They do. I understand her point. And she also made a point about antibodies and saying Ovechkin has the antibodies and all of that. And I know Russia's been rolling out one of its own vaccines that it may
have
stole.
They've had it for like 6 months.
Now that's cool. That's cool if the vaccine they're rolling out is working. But yes, these players are on the bench together. They're in the locker room together. They're not wearing masks when they're doing that and they're playing. And at the rink in general, I know that there are some pretty stringent protocols for masks at the rink and how many guys can be at the fitness center and working out and how many guys can do certain things. I know the planes are regimented. Everybody's in the same seat on the plane. If there's guys sitting beside each other on the plane, one guy eats while the other waits. Then the other guy eats when the other guy's done. Everyone sits on the same spot on the bus. Like, it is pretty thorough. And despite all of this and them knowing the rules, at the end of the day, like she said, like Ovechkin's wife said, they broke the rules. Dem's the rules, boys. Dem's the rules. You might not like them. This isn't a bubble. It's not a bubble anymore. And, you know, that mental ease of everyone being in the same atmosphere, environment, if you will, that doesn't exist. It is all open to the general public, although they've really hammered home the fact that it's limited to arena, bus, airport, flight, hotel. When you're in your hotel, do not mingle, do not hang out with it sucks. It sucks so much, but you gotta follow the rules. And this is just blatant disregard by very important players on the Washington Capitals. And it costs them literally, and it's gonna cost them on the ice. They're gonna miss 4 games. Like, it's just stupid and ignorant, really. And I don't care if you have antibodies. Those are the protocols the league put in place. Someone should have told them. And if someone didn't tell those guys, shame on the team. But if those guys were told and they know the rules and they still did this, which is entirely possible, shame on these players, especially the captain. Great NHLer, legend, future Hall of Famer, might tie Gretzky's scoring record. I don't know anymore because of the shortened seasons, but that's a dumb mistake.
Yeah, definitely. And right, it's the magnitude of what level of players these are. Like, the Sabres are playing them tonight and on Sunday. And those are two games now where if you're Buffalo or you're the Islanders who are going to play them in their two-game series the next week, both of those teams are going in like, all right, I get the Caps now without their best player, their number two center, their number one goalie, and a top four defenseman. Like, I am licking my chops now, and those four guys put their team in that spot to where they are severely shorthanded, missing four key players by doing what they did. So, a lot going into that. I think it's at least a testament, and other teams should take it as an example that you just don't do it. Yep. And if any other teams have gotten away with it so far, I think the organizations, let alone the players, the captains, you know, the leaders should step up and be like, hey, see what happened in DC? Don't do that, because look what's happening to them. They're going to miss 4 games, and those are all important players of that team. So yeah, you're right, though. It does suck. Can they play mini sticks in the hall, maybe? Like, is that socially distanced? That was something I did.
Well, yeah, mini sticks in the hall during travel hockey tournaments was always a ton of fun. They have huge conference rooms booked for meals. And maybe if they mask up and have plenty of hand sanitizer available and hit the mini sticks with the Lysol, they could set up a couple of nets in the conference room where their meals are and have a game. Absolutely.
Set up your own zones. You're not allowed to cross. You're not allowed to go into the neutral zone. You do something like that.
Yeah, and then
you can make that work. Get some team bonding going.
Yeah, it depends on the type of ball you use and how well it flies and how well you can hit it. But I like that. It's a good idea.
I always used the same ball. It was like the little Franklin, what is that? It's not styrofoam, but
like a
it's a foam,
foam
ball. Yeah, like a hard foam ball. I don't know if I've ever used a different
those
one.
Those were great.
Yeah.
They flew so well, and you could handle them so nicely.
Yes. I actually kind of used to cheat, by the way, in this. I would cut, if I had a stick that I outgrew, my dad would cut it down like to mini stick level, and then I would use that as my mini stick. I was using like real hockey sticks as my mini sticks.
Same.
Welcome back to the Locked On NHL podcast. Get the upper hand in your fantasy league with daily fantasy hockey advice from Locked On Fantasy Hockey. Fantasy hockey expert Scott Cullen gives you the tips, insights, and analysis for season-long dynasty and DFS leagues, breaking down all the stats and information to keep you ahead of the competition. Subscribe to Locked On Fantasy Hockey wherever you get podcasts.
All right, let's get to our biggest surprises of the NHL season so far. I don't know how big a surprise this one is that I'll start with here, because I'm not sure how good people thought they would have been in the first place, but the Vancouver Canucks cannot stop a puck to save their lives right now. Six games in, and they've allowed 28 goals. That is the most in the league by eight. And I think we expected a downgrade when they lost Jacob Markstrom to the Calgary Flames, who, by the way, has had a pretty darn strong start to his season, only a couple games in, obviously. But Vancouver's just complete inability to play defense at all and stop the puck once it gets to the net. I don't know. I think there's an argument to be made right now that they are potentially going to be the worst team in that North Division. We'll see what becomes of Ottawa. I think four games in, they look closer to average maybe than a lot of people would have thought. So it would maybe be dependent on the Senators and your Oilers, what becomes of them. But I think their talent eventually, that they will shoot them higher than, you know, the bottom. So I don't know. I'm a little worried about Vancouver, especially since, one more thing on them, Elias Pettersson has had a very rough start to the season. I think he's still sitting on just one assist that he had in the opener.
Vancouver is a team, after all of those moves and on the exodus from everyone basically to Calgary, essentially, I looked at that and I go, uh-oh. And I know they tried to make some moves and bring in a Holtby and a few other guys to patch it up. But, Joe, this is kind of what I expected from the Canucks. I saw them as a team on the outside looking in. Mm-hmm. When we see the postseason picture later this year, the Pettersson slow start thing surprised me. I thought he's a phenomenal talent, but this is kind of what I expected from the Canucks. Honestly, the one team that's surprising me on the other side of things, and I think I'm one of the few, and right now I look very silly, I'm going to readily admit that, I didn't see Montreal just burning everyone up the way that they're doing it right now. Because they came in, they mopped the floor with the Oilers, who have been very Jekyll and Hyde this season. And they're having their way with the Canucks at this point. Tyler Toffoli is just shredding them, 5 goals in 2 games. Mm-hmm. And then they go toe-to-toe again on Saturday, which, you know, for the Canucks is a little bit daunting. But the Habs, in a positive light, have surprised me. And again, there's some that are like, this team is legit. They're going to be a team that's going to be in the playoffs for sure. But it's interesting. And then at the other end of the rink, the Florida Panthers getting off to a solid start in two games. I honestly just don't think of the Florida Panthers, but they're 2-0 to start the year. And I'm like, how about that? Two Florida teams at the top of the Central.
Yeah, and they're tied for second, but everyone else has played more games than them, except for Dallas, of course, because they haven't played yet at all. I like the Florida pick there, because if they could get a bounce-back season out of Bobrovsky with some of the talent they have, they could absolutely finish second in that division. I think I would still pick Carolina if you pinned me down right now, but I think I'd pick Florida to make the playoffs right now, especially with what's going on in Columbus with Dubois and how bad Chicago and Detroit, I think, are probably going to be, especially Chicago. Detroit's been at least okay to start the year. And Nashville is always iffy too. So I like Florida as a pick there. I definitely love the Montreal pick. I have never been big on Montreal in the last couple of years, but this year, and part of it has been, they've never had that X factor, that elite level offensive talent in their top six, at least for a few years now. And I'm still not sure that they have that, but their depth is at an all-time high, four lines deep with offensive talent. And I'm wondering if we're going to see maybe Nick Suzuki blossom into, you know, that potential like go-to guy on a top line or even in the top six. And I don't know if he's there yet. He's still only 21 years old and he's at 5 points in 5 games. It's not like he's blowing the doors off everybody, but he's had a good start to the season. So his development, you mentioned Toffoli has scored a goal per game right now. And then Tatar, Drouin, Josh Anderson looks really good to start the year for them. You got Paul Byron, a 20-goal scorer in your fourth line. I mean, they're so deep. And I'm not even sure Carey Price has been at his best so far to start this season. So he's at an 887 save percentage. It's only three games. But yeah, I agree. I like Montreal, and I would have picked Toronto almost easily to win that division coming into the year. But right now, I would be – Montreal, to me, is neck and neck with them in the odds.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because Toronto is going to be without Joe Thornton for a month. Austin Matthews is a little bit banged up with an upper body situation. And the Oilers were able to shut them down defensively. Like, it was weird watching two teams with high-powered offensive stars play defensive hockey. It was almost like a game of cat and mouse, like – both teams afraid to make the first move to bust things open. And it was just a defensive masterpiece, if you will, and had a lot of people complaining. And we'll see if that continues on Friday night. But the one thing about the Habs that really stands out to me after watching them here for a couple of games in Edmonton against the Oilers, their defense, Joe, is big and mean. And they move the puck well, and they skate well, and they're gonna intimidate teams, especially teams with smaller forwards that like to buzz around and be creative offensively. These guys can move and they can hurt you, and they play mean, and they have that edge to them. And that might give the forwards up front of the Habs that extra confidence and feeling like they're an inch taller and 10 pounds heavier, just because they have these giants back there that are going to throw a cross check in the teeth of their opposition. It's a good feeling. And then when you do break through the defense, you've got Carey Price back there, who, like you said, his numbers aren't great thus far. And then Jake Allen, who's a good backup. He's not a starter or a number one, to be honest with you. Yeah, this team's put together well. We'll see if they can maintain it. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But we'll see if they can maintain this. They're off to a phenomenal start. I'm curious to see if they can keep it going or if they're going to hit some tough spells and dry patches at times this year, which is inevitable for most teams. But in a 56-game season, if they're able to minimize that, they're going to be off and running.
Definitely. Last team I want to bring up to you, are how likely do we think it is that New Jersey can have a season here? They're at 5 points in four games, nothing crazy, 2-1-1. Jack Hughes has kind of been leading the way. He's had a great start to the year with 6 points in four games. And watching a little bit of their last couple of games, he is buzzing around. Like, he has always got the puck when he's on the ice. He is not really shooting it all that much. In fact, I'm looking right now. I think, what has he got? 7 shots on the season in four games. Yeah, it's not like he's trying to go out there and score 50 goals, but he is a very good playmaker. And Miles Woods got 3 goals on the season, and I saw 2 of them recently that Hughes had great setups on. So I like the start to the season Hughes has had. I think at the end of the day, I like this little upstart New Jersey story at the beginning of the year, but I still would think talent will rule the day and they'll probably fall back.
Yeah. You look at the Devils and you go, well, that's cute, isn't it? Look at them fighting a good fight.
That's a great way to put it.
You look at the teams that they're ahead of right now and you figure the Bruins are going to wake up and start to hit their rhythm a little bit and stride. Penguins, too, after a sluggish start, you figure that they're going to wake up a bit. We're going to see how the Capitals respond, even though they're slightly ahead of the Devils. When they get their Russians back after their stupidity and mistake that they made by hanging out in the hotel room, not following protocol. And even the Rangers, to an extent, you kind of expect more from. I'm expecting more from the Sabres. I was really hoping that they would have a spark this year. It's still, they're only 4 games in. Yeah. So when it comes to the Devils, it's nice. And basically half of what used to be Oilers TV is now doing NJD.TV or whatever they call New Jersey Devils digital TV. Westcott and my old boss, Mark Ciampa, and one of my old producers, Blaine Sayers. And it's nice to see their social media posts about how good their team's doing and the rah-rah stuff. But I don't know if it's going to last. And so I kind of shoot that message. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. I'm at least rooting for him because, you know, as long as it doesn't get in the way of, we'll see. Sabres are 2 points, 5 games. It's brutal. I'm always rooting for Lindy Ruff. And like, he is a Buffalo guy, man. Like, he's wearing the Bills mask at practice every day at Devils practice. And he is closing in on top five, in the top five in all-time wins. He's probably got to make it to a third season in New Jersey to get there. So we'll see. But if they have a, you know, a surprising little season here this year, then I think that's likely for him. And I'm rooting for that to happen. So, yeah, a cute story is a great way to put the Devils through five games here. All right. That's going to do it on today's episode. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you next week. This has been the Locked On NHL Podcast with Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.